This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. J.J. Watt on the Pat McAfee Show yesterday, making his weekly appearance. And they were going through some of the big performances from this past weekend. And so as they were kind of getting to the end of the list, Pat McAfee said, "Hey, J.J., you got anybody else that deserve some credit from this past weekend?
Is there any other people that you would like to highlight that we should be talking about, you think?"
Sadly, it was against, obviously, the Texans, but I think Jonathan Greenard deserves some love. He had three sacks against his former team. You could consider it a revenge game. He mentioned this. First play, first sack of the game, they have a tight end lined up on him. I mean, that is insulting as a defensive lineman, I will say. If you think you're going to block me straight up with a tight end after I left your team and I signed somewhere else, That will set you. Look at this. No offense to the tight end, Cade Stover, great player, but that's a tough looking rep to put on film the next day. And I think for JG, he obviously felt very good there, and this day had to feel good.
All right, so JJ confirms what Jonathan Greenard confirmed over the weekend. Stover, are you doing this? Why are you?
Well, there was, the thing about that play was, if I'm remembering properly, they did send a linebacker. The Vikings did send a linebacker. So Cam Akers, instead of being able to help out with Jonathan Greenard, ended up having to pick that linebacker. And because the offensive line was trying to slide, Laremy Tunsil was sliding to the right because they suck at pass protection in general. So they're trying to send Laremy to snuff out fires here, there, everywhere. And versus that defense, it's not always an insult to have a tight end blocking a defensive end. Usually you see it more when a guy's crumming across the formation or doing something like that. But the way it worked out, if you're a defensive end, you don't care or worry too much about the reason why. You take the insult. You're going to block me with a tight end, okay? You don't think about the fact, like, well, we were blitzing. And you're going to block me with a rookie tight end. Mm-hmm. Cool. This is what happens.
Yeah.
And then you look to the other sideline or point up at the coordinator's booth.
Yeah.
The best thing to do is to tell the offensive line, "Boy, they're screwing you guys with this. What the hell?"
Oh, get in their head a little bit, huh?
Yeah. Subterfuge.
I like that.
Yeah. They're like, "Boy, I'll tell you what, man. You guys should be way better than this. What is your offensive coordinator doing?"
Knowing how much you get paid for sacks, I'd be like, "You're insulting me. Could you please insult me five more times today?" That would be amazing.
"I'll let you do all manner of things to me."
Yeah.
"If you pay me right."
That's right. Pull up spot rack.
"Hey, lady, I'm not into that. What's that you say?"
"Oh, $30 million a year, huh?"
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's go.
Turns out I'm kind of into it.
All right. I can't decide. We're going to play an exchange here between McAfee and J.J. Watt. So yeah. I'll put this out there and then play it, and then you and I can talk about this. Look, the Pat McAfee Show is super popular. I think it's really good for us that J.J.'s on there because we get some extra content that is Texans-related, and the Texans are worth talking about on national shows like McAfee. And J.J.'s, I think, a really good source for thoughts on the Texans. And the fact that McAfee played for the Colts adds a completely next level dynamic to it with the rivalry. I can't decide if Colts versus Texans stuff has the potential to get super fun or super annoying between McAfee and J.J. Watt. Let's take a listen to this back and forth on Anthony Richardson yesterday.
punching in the mouth football. And we're not just punching like this. We're throwing right asses. We're going 10 plus yards. AR is an explosive play waiting to happen. He leads the NFL in yards per completion at 16.2 by nearly 3 full yards. Okay. Boom. So he's not able to hit everybody. But when he does, it is way down there. And that is what the Colts are, baby. This guy's only in his 8th game in the NFL. JJ, look out. Look out, JJ.
I don't have to look out. We've played a game already.
We're different teams now. We're different teams now.
AFC Defensive Player of the Week, Jalen Johnson.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
On the sideline.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
Anthony Richardson looks so bad. He's got it.
Do you think McAfee's? I didn't watch it. I only heard the audio. Is he serious?
No, I can't imagine. He's being sarcastic about it.
Okay.
What was the stat he had cited?
16.3 yards per completion.
Yeah, that's
three
right.
Yeah. 3 yards more than the next closest.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if anything, that's a glaring issue right now, is because that's all he's good at is the deep strike every now and then.
Yeah.
With none of the other efficiency that comes with modern quarterbacking.
No.
Anthony Richardson is built like a 1950s quarterback. Except for the whole athletic part. But other than that, yeah, when it comes to, they used to just, Mel Kiper.
I don't know what footage from the 50s you're watching.
Mel Kiper was saying that he would like the old school football. Like, slinging Sammy Baugh. Yeah. Yeah, those guys would throw it deep and complete like 30% of their passes.
Yeah. Daryl LaMonica. Yeah.
Mm.
So are you up for these next several seasons of McAfee v. Watt? Talking Colts versus Texans on there. Do you enjoy it or is it a day by day thing?
I don't know if it's not gonna get like Stephen A. Smith taking on Skip Bayless about the Cowboys or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't think it's gonna be mean spirited or vicious. Neither of those guys are gonna go all in and just really. I think McAfee is always trying to almost suck up to Houston. And I think JJ, it's more like he's trying not to be too snarky or anything and take a lot of shots because he's that's not who he is. So I'll enjoy the banter, but I don't think it's necessarily going to be like viral video type stuff.
Yeah. Text message. This goes back to Kikuchi and his 14 hours of sleep the night before starts. If I couldn't sleep 14 hours if I was dead. I'm lucky to get 7 and then I'm wide awake.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the other part of it too. I think for the real world, especially where you're not a professional athlete and you're not as physically taxed, I think for the most part it's okay. The equivalent is getting at least 7 hours of sleep a night, which is something that most people, you could figure out a way to budget it. I know some people have really wacky schedules. Most people could figure out a way to budget it, but there's something that you're not sacrificing to. There's usually you couldn't find an extra hour in your entire day. Not just during your busy time at work or anything, but day in and day out. And I'm guilty of that.
Yeah.
I know that I would be better off with 7 hours of sleep per night. But there's some times where I'm like, I'm basically superhuman. Mm-hmm. I'm fine on 5 and everybody knows it. Shut up, Sean. Stop talking to me.
Pope effing Zaza, baby.
Yeah.
Someone is saying on the text page that Kikuchi is also eating 4 Benadryl before he goes to bed. Says no way a sober person can sleep 14 hours.
Yeah, that's what I don't get is I think if you're well rested, if you are, that's why I wonder too if he catches up on his sleep the night before.
Yeah.
Because if you're well rested, you shouldn't be able to sleep for 14 hours.
Right.
Like it's usually a sign of an issue.
Yeah.
That you're like, if you're able to sleep 14 hours, it means that you are either really sleep deprived or you've got some kind of medical concern that's draining away your life.
Correct. Force. Yeah. Yeah.
I wonder if he's sleeping for 14 or if he's meditating for part of that. Like if he's just in bed for 14 hours.
Yeah. There's no way that he's getting REM sleep for 14 hours.
Yeah, he might just be like laying on his back, visualizing and doing breathing exercises and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe. Text message. Will it be Kikuchi, Framber and Arigetti as 1, 2 and 3 with Hunter Brown as the 4th when needed, or will they add Verlander? Then says, topic not being talked about enough. Verlander can't be in the rotation right now. First of all, we've talked about this topic plenty, but apologies. Yeah. Maybe just not the segments, sir or ma'am, that you've been listening, so that we've talked about it a lot. there is zero chance that Spencer Arrighetti is in the rotation for a wild card round ahead of Hunter Brown. Hunter Brown's one of the 10 best starters in the American League right now.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess, but maybe we're not talking about that enough, Sean.
I guess
it's like all the reasons that Arrighetti is not ahead of Hunter Brown in the playoff rotation.
Right. If I had to, if I'm predicting right now, it'll go Fromber, Hunter Brown, Kikuchi. I feel real strong. Like I'd bet a lot of money on that. That would be the order they would do it in
For a 3-game series
for a wild card round.
Yeah. Then getting into a 5-game series, what's your feel on that?
Well, it depends. Does the wild card round go 3 games, and then you're turning right back around, and you know?
No, let's say the wild card game goes 2 games.
Then Kikuchi probably pitches the first game of the ALDS because you won't have enough time. Framber won't have enough rest, I don't think.
Right.
From Tuesday, because I think the next round starts Saturday, so Framber would only have 3 days rest. So it would go Kikuchi. Probably Arrighetti, and then I think that gives you enough time to get back to the top of the order again with
Framber. Your 4-man playoff rotation. Yeah. And then Blanco Arrighetti might be any manner of combinations.
You're right. I'm shelving Blanco. It might be Blanco instead of Arrighetti.
I've sensed a certain Blanco disrespect out of you. You weren't happy for him for making the playoffs.
That's not true. No, I said going into that segment, I was happy for everybody. Yeah. These are the people I'm most happy for.
Yeah, and specifically excluded Blanco. So, I mean, this is what happens when you don't get enough sleep. And then, yesterday you said something, I forgot to bring it up because I think we're up against a break or something, where you questioned how Blanco would be used in the playoffs. And I thought, I wanted a clarification on it.
Yesterday?
Maybe I just misheard you.
Yeah. I don't remember that. I don't remember.
Okay.
I think he's going to, Well, now that I think it through,
I think you put Arrighetti in front of him as a starter.
I just did 30 seconds ago, so I probably did yesterday too.
Yeah,
but I need to think it through more. I need to probably think it. I probably am being a little dismissive of Blanco as a starter in the rotation just because he hasn't been. Arrighetti had a really bad moment in the last few weeks.
Yeah.
But Arrighetti's good moments have been hyper dominant in the last month or so. Whereas Blanco has kind of regressed from what he was in the first half of the season.
Blanco, to me, I just look at those two in the playoffs as a piggyback combo.
Yeah.
And that Arrighetti especially, because, man, Arrighetti, he's worked his way through some troubles in the first inning at times, but there's just too many instances of him being a nightmare in the first inning to where in the playoffs, don't mess with it. Like, all right, Blanco can be a reliever and a starter, and this is him's time to come in and be long relief.
Yeah, I think Blanco is going to be more comfortable in a relief role than Arrighetti. I mean, Arrighetti's been nothing but a starter all year. That's a good question. I wonder what the audience thinks, like who they would rather. Who's the fourth starter in all this? Is it Arrighetti or is it Blanco? I think the most interesting thing is most people would say it's definitely not Verlander right now.
Yeah. I think, so far, let's see, in his last four outings, Blanco has pitched 6 innings, 6 innings, 2 innings, and then 5 innings. But he's given up 2 earned runs in that stretch. Just the most recent one versus the Angels, two runs.
Hold up. He gave up 2 earned runs over that whole 4-game stretch? He gave up 2 earned runs?
Yeah.
Really?
Well, now you've got me second-guessing.
Dominant. You're right.
Blanco was rough. Well, he only pitched 2 innings against Arizona.
Okay.
It was August where everything, like, it looked like, oh, okay, it's back to reality. And then September was pretty good for him.
Okay. I don't have a strong feeling either way on Arrighetti and Blanco. I probably just wasn't paying close attention to Blanco bouncing back, I guess. I don't know. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. Let's circle back in the next segment to D'Amico Ryans. Tank Dell looks like he may miss the game this weekend. Some criticism for maybe having Tank Dell in late in the game. I thought D'Amico had a pretty strong answer about this yesterday that we will hear coming up next.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age, wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain. All symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, But that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. MIDI offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Tank Dell, it looks like he may miss this game on Sunday. That's a shame. Because we're all waiting for the breakout performance for this offense that involves all of the pieces. Good news is you still got Stephon Diggs and Nico Collins out there. D'Amico Ryans, I mean, I didn't see a ton of heat for this, but I guess there was enough out there where someone felt compelled to ask the question. Is there concern with having a player like Tank playing late in a – I think it's a valid question, too, by the way – late in a blowout game because of the potential for an injury happening?
No concern for me. Injuries can happen at any given time. What if the injury happened first play of the game? Should he be out there? We can't control when injuries happen. Guys are going to go play. That's part of our game, part of the nature of the business. When you play this game, unfortunately, injuries happen. Nobody can predict when injuries happen or when a guy should be in, shouldn't be in.
That's the closest I've heard, D'Amico, to getting like a little chippy with an answer, you know, like we're,
yeah.
D'Amico doesn't often do the thing that chippy head coaches do where they respond with a question back to the reporter. And that was kind of, I don't know how rhetorical the question was or if he was really looking for an answer, but there was enough of a pause there to where it felt like, oh, okay.
It's funny because this is one of those things where I think, in a bad loss, there's no right answer for anybody, and nobody's going to be placated by anything. Yeah. Are the Texans supposed to pull all of their starters?
Right.
Which is, by the way, mathematically impossible in the game of football on a Sunday. Damn near mathematically impossible. Are you supposed to pull all your starters off the field? Are you supposed to selectively pick which starters to pull and which to leave on? Are the fans going to be totally cool with the next two extra touchdowns that are tacked on because of it? I mean, it's a violent game, and guys play football, and your starters are going to be out there. You're going to try to the Texans at this point in the season, they need all the damn reps they can get because the training camp offense didn't do it for them.
Yeah,
you know, they have not functioned offensively the way they need to be functioning. So I don't need to treat these guys with kid gloves. I know on the broadcast they were saying like, all right, it's time to pull CJ Stroud. There's a boneheaded, meathead, old school element to me that doesn't like pulling anybody in football games because you're losing. There is just part of it where, man, like, listen, part of the comeuppance and not going out and performing is that you got to sit out there through that fourth quarter, which is the longest damn 15 minutes of your life when you're getting destroyed, because it just time moves down to just a trickle through the hourglass. It sucks. And you just have to sit out there and stew on it. I don't feel the need to pull Tank Dell just because you're getting the crap beat out of you.
I'm
more reps. I don't care. It's football.
Ben, we'll skip back up to D'Amico and CJ on these other topics, but let's just get real quick, as long as we're talking about Tank, here's CJ Stroud on what to do without Tank in there.
It's hard to say, you know, we haven't had to deal with that this year, but, you know, we have other guys that are well equipped, but would we love one of the best receivers in the league to be out there for sure, you know? But, you know, it's always Sally in the league, next man up, got to find a way to win a football game, you know what I mean? So, you know, we're praying for Tank, hope he's okay, and we know that hopefully he's trending up, you know, but whatever happens, we got to be able to try to win.
Who do you think we see more of? Do you think we see more Xavier Hutchinson, do you think we see? I mean, Mechie's been inactive, so it's hard to imagine he goes from inactive to jumping over everybody else.
Yeah.
Do we see more Robert Woods because they like the veteran presence? Do we see more two tight end sets in there? Do they throw to the backs a little more? Like, what do you think?
Are we going to say who are we going to see? Who's going to replace the three catches per game that Tank Dell's been getting?
No. I mean, yes, I guess, but Tank's a. Tank brings
no,
an element.
I know. Yeah, who do they use more? Like, regardless of what the actual targets
receptions are.
I think it ends up being probably Xavier Hutchinson.
Yeah.
Or maybe Robert Woods. Maybe it ends up being Robert Woods. I think now, all right, this is the thing. You're going against an offense or a defense in the Jaguars that they play a lot of man. And their really good rookie there is injured now. Rookie cornerback is injured. But the Jaguars have played a lot of man, whether their starting cornerbacks are healthy or not. And I think that there's going to be more opportunities downfield this week than there have been these last few weeks where they've played a lot of cornerbacks that are in zone a lot. I think there will be opportunities. I think Xavier Hutchinson is still the guy that fits into the offense best and seems to be most fully integrated into it. So it's probably just more snaps out of Xavier Hutchinson.
Yeah, that's where I'm going with it.
John Mechie might be active, but Xavier Hutchinson ends up getting more snaps and routes and targets and all that.
That'd be fun to see. CJ Stroud talked about this confidence level, knowing his team is going against, likely going against a lot of man coverage this week.
We're confident in everything, you know, like zone and man and fire zone. And, you know, we've kind of seen it all this year, especially playing against a team that's kind of does what they like, what they're going to do week one, week two with, Gus and the Colts. And then week two and then week three against Minnesota, they kind of do everything. So then we've gotten a good rapport of just like defense's plan is different. But you know, we've more so got zone, so you know, we're willing to play anything. We whatever it is, we got to just find a way to win.
Yeah, and I think it's impossible to predict exactly what the Jaguars will do because the three teams the Texans just faced are comfortable. And now I know you're going to think, I know a lot of people are thinking, yeah, but the Vikings blitz a lot. Yeah, but they do a lot of it with zone, playing zone behind the blitz. And they do a really good job of mixing and matching and blending all of their coverages. The Jaguars have just lined up and played man more frequently than these previous three teams. And they'll stick with it, even if they're getting destroyed. So I think there's a part of them like that think, hey, this is what we do, and we're going to get good at doing this. But I always go back to that year a few years ago when teams really started playing cover two against Pat Mahomes and wanted to just take the top off that offense. And that's what pretty much every defense was doing against them, except for the Raiders, who said, nope, we're going to line up and do what we do. And it wasn't even a lot of man. It was a lot of cover three, but like they just weren't playing. They weren't playing as conservatively as other teams had been. And the Chiefs just destroyed them. They looked like the old Chiefs offense. So
that'd be nice.
Yeah, I think I think maybe the Jaguars, for one, the Texans offense so far hasn't been as explosive or as scary, but part of that has been that teams have done the appropriate thing against them to take the passing game out of it. This is the kind of stuff that gets coaches fired. If the Jaguars say, like, nope, we're going to line up and we're going to play man versus these guys, and then if Nico Collins goes off for 250 yards, that might be what blows the Jaguars up.
Yeah.
Or maybe they do a good job of it.
Yeah. A lot of people weighing in on Tank. Look, he's a smaller receiver. I think that's why in the offseason the Texans went out and got another receiver. He's probably going to be hurt often in his career. Another text, Tank will be a one-hit wonder, won't be any good. Okay, I dismissed that text roundly. That answer made no sense from D'Amico. The difference between the beginning of the game and the end was that the Texans had a chance of winning at the beginning of the game as opposed to the end of the game.
There is that part of it, too, where, like, okay, I don't think D'Amico is wired to accept whatever the spreadsheet says on chances of winning the game. I think there is also, I mean, there's still a part of me, man, as long as there's 4 minutes in the game remaining and you are allowed to onside kick with 2 minutes left, I don't like the message it sends to a team if you just pack up the tents. I do think there's a culture thing there. And some people don't like that because they think it's either too rah-rah or what have you. I just know it as a player on the field. I always lost a little bit of respect for a coach when he quit.
Yeah.
You know, when they quit when there's still a mathematical chance of being in the game.
Yeah.
And you can tell, oh, they're quitting or they're just trying to save face now.
Yep.
I always lost respect for that coach.
Yeah.
I didn't like it. I want to fight until I'm dead, you know?
Yeah. I understand that. I do.
What point in the game was it? How much time was left on the clock when Tank got hurt?
I couldn't tell. I couldn't see when he got hurt. I heard more about him leaving with like a hand injury.
Yeah.
They were looking at his hand.
Came back and then broke the four ribs later.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. Rennell Blanco getting some support as well. Someone mentions the two innings. If you missed it, the previous segment, Seth and I went back and forth on what the playoff rotation outside of the top three guys would look like if you get into an ALDS or an ALCS and you start to need more guys. Blanco has a 2.88 ERA right now. It's not like he's completely collapsed. That's a text message. The two innings he was out of the bullpen, and that's what I had forgotten about. When you said his game log was five innings, two innings, six innings, in my mind, I'm like, okay, well, he must have gotten chased and got shelled in the two-inning outing. He finished that game because they skipped him in the rotation. I guess with Rennell Blanco, if you go look at his game log prior to September, he should have made the All-Star game. A lot of people felt so. He comes back after the All-Star game, and in his seven starts for the remainder of July and in August, his ERA was around five. And this is at a time where Fromber is rising, Hunter Brown is dealing, Eric Geddy was dealing. They traded for Kikuchi, who's been great since day one. And so I think for me, the reason he was probably out of mind for me is because not just that he had regressed, but it had been such a stark contrast. That's why they skipped him in the rotation. He was such a stark contrast from him and everybody else.
Yeah, and I think that's where one of the plans that they had when they added Kikuchi was, all right, guys like Blanco, they could really use an extra day of rest at least. And I think it paid dividends. I think it started to, now you're seeing, okay, hopefully a Blanco that's more rejuvenated over the course of this last month.
Yeah.
And in the playoffs, you don't have to use him heavily, and he's going to get rest between starts. I would not be surprised at all if there's a Charlie Morton type performance out of him in the playoffs.
I agree with that.
He comes in the third inning and finishes the entire game or something like that.
Yes, I could see that. I could definitely see that for sure. Maybe not the whole.
By the way, everybody, I was exaggerating about Tank Dell's four broken ribs. That's not the actual injury. He's got a rib/chest injury, but not a. Yeah.
Yep.
I realized we moved quickly into something else, and I didn't want somebody to think I was serious on that.
No, that's okay. The Blanco thing, I could see him doing some Charlie Morton stuff. I think Hader will still be finishing games because if you remember that 2017 team, Ken Giles was the closer, and he was lost. Like they had to go with Morton and McCullers. And, you know, pitching three or four innings to end games because they had no closer at that point. So that's traded for Osuna the next year.
That's why he was wearing that no bleeps given T-shirt in the celebration for the World Series.
Well, yeah.
He was. He still gets a guy. I was happy for Giles in that moment that he could still enjoy it even though he'd been kind of just pushed off to the side.
Giles was a weirdo, man. Punching himself in the face, walking off.
I know. Giles is a tortured soul.
Yes.
That's old school. Giles might have been one of the last true nut jobs you'll see in professional sports. Now these kids get all the good stuff, positivity and everything drilled into their head from such a young age, which is good. It's good. I'm not being Joe old school that way. But I feel like we don't get as many genuine basket cases that we used to.
No, not like Giles.
Like Fromber, we saw the transformation before our very eyes.
Yep.
You know, he
could
have been an old school basket case.
The Athletic, this just dropped. The Athletic did a vote of 40 anonymous executives and coaches on who the best front offices are in the NFL. This is interesting. Did the Texans make the cut for the top 10? Front offices in the NFL, just a couple years removed from a 3-win season and just a few years removed from having Jack Easterby running everything. We'll let you know. We'll give you the results coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast
with you. Congratulations to Jonathan and Katie. Won the U of H tickets. Good job, Jonathan. Yeah.
Good job, Jonathan.
Way to be calling.
Sean, I don't want you to be stressed out. I could see the look of concern on your face. Ben and I were dealt an administrative nightmare. And you know, through no fault of my own or Ben, it was just heaved onto our laps. And you know how I am with any kind of You know how I am with normal administrative things.
Yes.
But this is an administrative nightmare.
Is triage administrative stuff.
Which means for Ben, when I'm trying to deal with an administrative nightmare, that turns into like a night terror on speed. So that's, yeah.
For Ben or you?
For Ben, mostly.
Yeah.
But it was agitating me because I know that this makes life more difficult for Ben.
Yeah.
And I'm already making life difficult for Ben normally, and now I'm making it even that harder.
As am I. If I had a dime for every time during the show, I just get on the back show. I'm like, hey, Ben, those three cuts that we got right there, shuffle them around, move this one here, move this one there.
Yeah.
So, you know, Ben rolls with the punches really well. Good job, Ben. The Athletic did a survey of 40 executives and coaches voting for the top front offices. And it is nice to be clicking on articles once again, you know, that like, oh, the Texans could be in here.
You don't have to scroll down, though, if they are in there. You know, you're like, yeah, like if this was ranked the top 32 front offices, right? Less than two calendar years ago, we would have been like, oh, great. Here I got to scroll.
Yeah.
Sprain my first two fingers trying to get to the bottom of this article.
Yep. Now, I will say this. In my initial reaction when I saw the list of the top 10 was disappointment because the Texans are not in the top 10 of front offices in the NFL.
Recency bias.
But, well, the recency bias would get him in the top 10 because they had a hell of an offseason.
The offense has been underperforming and they just got shellacked.
Oh, okay. When I think of front office, I don't even think of the first three games yet. And neither are these voters because the Ravens, who are 1-2, are number one in the front office, right? So
They have a long track record of doing things the right way.
Which is the common theme among all these teams in this list is you got to be doing it for a little while. That's the message. If anybody looks at this list and they're disappointed that Nick Caserio and his band of scouts and talent evaluators and analytics folks didn't crack the top 10. I have some good news, though, that's going to come. I promise. But the top 10 goes like this. Baltimore is a runaway number one.
Mm-hmm.
They did a point system with it where they voted like 1 through 5, 5 points for a first place vote, et cetera, et cetera. They got 30 first place votes out of 40. Like Baltimore cleaned up on the first place votes.
Baltimore, you know what they do really well is that they've got a methodology, they've got a certain way of doing things, and they know how to do that really, really well. They do not, they're consistently bringing in the same types of players.
They're the model. Yeah. I take it back. First place votes are worth 10. So they got 15 first place votes. Kansas City got 13 first place votes. So Kansas City's number two on this list. San Francisco only got 3 first place votes, but they're third overall because they showed up on practically every ballot there. So Baltimore, Kansas City, San Francisco, Philly is number four on the list. They got 5 first place votes. I suppose the one that maybe is sort of the model for the Texans popping up on something like this in a year or two would be the Detroit Lions, who never would have shown up on this in a million years, but they're fifth right now. The Lions are.
I think the Lions are going to have an advantage over, like in a head-to-head matchup with the Texans when it comes to the way they've operated and the way they've built their team. The one thing they're going to get a lot of credit for is doing it with Jared Goff. Versus, and you know, that was something that, look, they traded away a good asset in Matt Stafford and got one of the things they got back was Jared Goff, and they vastly exceeded expectations with him. The Texans, there's always going to be a little bit of like, okay, well, you got your quarterback by drafting him. A lot of people might assume that they would have taken Bryce Young if they had the chance. So they're going to be grudging and giving credit for that decision to get at C.J. Stroud, I think. Whether that's accurate or not, whatever. But that's, I think, when it comes to things like this.
Yeah, the other thing I would add, I agree with what you're saying about the Lions. The other thing I would add to that, especially based on what you and I have been talking about for the last 4 days with the Texans, the Lions have put together a really, really good offensive line. Like, that's allowed Jared Goff to really thrive and allow those skill guys they've gone to get to go out and make plays. You know?
Yeah.
Done a really good job there. Green Bay Packers are sixth. I'm fine with that. 7 through 10, Seattle, the Rams, the Bills, and the Steelers. So there you go. Those are the teams the Texans are chasing. Seattle's an interesting one. They have managed to, through Geno Smith, like Seattle has never really bottomed out at all during this late Russell Wilson to post-Russell Wilson era. You know what I mean?
They're
competitive.
Pete Carroll Pete Carroll's defenses were always very respectable throughout the entire thing. They weren't Legion of Boom status necessarily. But I think that's where, and they had, like, whatever you think of Russell Wilson, then he was still a very, you know, he's still a very good NFL quarterback, whether you think he's overrated or what have you. So it was just those, they had a couple years of ugliness, and now they seem to have righted the ship. And that's, and they've done it. Like, it's hard to manage success, and they had a lot of success.
They did.
A long time.
They did. Rams, Bills, Steelers. I got no problem with that. Here's the good news. Okay, if you're looking at the futures, I page down to the bottom here. There were only two other teams that received multiple top five votes from the panelists. Just two. They are the Houston Texans and the Cleveland Browns. Those are the only two front offices, other than the teams in the top 10, to get multiple top five votes from the panelists. The Cowboys appeared on one The Cowboys appeared on one ballot, receiving a first place vote.
Oh my God. No way.
Way.
Well, okay. I'm guessing, did they have a quote on there in that?
No,
I'm guessing it's about their president of personnel there. Will McClay. Will McClay.
Yeah.
They draft really well.
Incredibly
they
well.
They draft really well. One of the reasons they're in the bind they're in right now, where they have three guys that could be earning the top contract in their position, you know, if, depending on what they do with Micah Parsons, is they draft really, really well. They
maybe
just
the
can't really. So, I mean, you could, but the maybe you want to blame Mike McCarthy, then they're responsible for hiring Mike McCarthy. But what? Other than that, they draft really, really well.
To that point, what's crazier, that they only appeared on one ballot, or that the one ballot they appeared on, it was a first place vote?
Which the first place vote being it.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, because they've been abysmal in the playoffs.
They've
just been an absolute train wreck and underperformed in the playoffs. So at some point that comes back on your organization. But yeah, I would say I'm surprised they didn't get more votes.
It's 40 voters. They were on one ballot out of 40. The Cowboys have not been a trash front office.
How many were they allowed to vote for? How many?
Five, top five.
Five, yeah. I'm surprised that there weren't at least three votes in total.
Yeah, just something out of 40 people. But the Texans and the Browns, the only, I think it's funny, it's the Texans and the Browns. The team that got a haul for Deshaun Watson, and the team that they pilfered in that process also got
If you think about just in general, like, look at the success of these teams that have the really good front offices by first place votes. The Ravens, the Chiefs, the 49ers, and the Eagles, they've all made Super Bowls within the last few years. And yet you look at the Ravens, the 49ers, and the Eagles, I don't think anybody looks at those quarterbacks as like, oh yeah, that's the guy that's the awesome postseason quarterback that's going to do it for you.
That's right.
They were guys that could have won Super Bowls, but they're not Pat Mahomes level or caliber. So I think the quality of the team built around those guys was huge with all of
that. Well, this goes to show you the respect for the Ravens, is that to your point, the Chiefs have won multiple Super Bowls in the last 4 years.
Yeah.
The Niners have been to multiple Super Bowls in the last few years. The Eagles were in a Super Bowl 2 years ago.
Yeah.
The Ravens actually haven't been to one since Joe Flacco back in the day.
Yeah, and yet they won this thing,
you know?
Yeah. Immediately, I thought, I realized that the Ravens you exclude from that. They've had really good regular season success.
Yeah.
But Lamar Jackson just hasn't been all that good in the playoffs.
That's right.
One game versus the Titans. Is that still his only really good playoff game? He had a good playoff game a couple years ago.
Yeah, I don't remember.
But largely, he's been rendered ineffective in the playoffs.
Yep, he has.
Although, I mean, the Chiefs game last year, he played well enough to beat the Chiefs.
They turned the ball over twice at the goal line.
Yeah.
They should have won that game. Hey, you know what? You know what's happening today? I might have to pay some attention to this today. The Oakland A's final game in their ballpark is this afternoon at 2:30. And there apparently is all sorts of extra security for this thing. Like the Rangers, they're playing the Rangers. The Rangers brought extra security with them. From what I understand, there's extra security. It's sold out. This is the highest ticket of the season easily so far. Nice of the A's to finally sell out a game. But this is the last game the A's are ever going to play in that stadium. And the thought is that game starts at 2:30 our time, which is 12:30 out there. The thought is that by like 4 o'clock, this stadium, whatever destruction, you know, whatever implosion they need to do with this stadium, the fans will have taken care of about half of it by the time dinner time rolls around.
The irony of it is that the original owner of the A's would have welcomed that kind of anarchy. Charlie. And that was one of the things that made them beloved. It was when the A's first came into the league, they were like, yeah, let's keep it weird, man. Let's just, yeah, we'll have these stupid drums and all this other stuff. We're going to have some fun. But they lost that somewhere along the way.
Somewhere along
they
the
became,
way.
They became just a money grubbing, revenue sharing piece of crap, just don't care about our fans team. And I got to be careful. I'm speaking into a microphone. I don't want to encourage anything. But I understand the frustration of those A's fans.
It's not the stadium's fault, though. The poor stadium, man. Just
well, yeah, but they want to take home pieces of the stadium.
I understand why they're
doing
it.
They have memories of that. They're not like, Sean, the stadium is doomed, okay?
Yeah, no, I know. Yeah, I'm just kidding.
They're going to take off that whole extra set of stands that they had added for the
Raiders.
That's
true. They haven't even been using half the stands for the.
Julia was out there during the last game. They were out there, and it looked like she might as well have been off in outer space.
I would try to take home part of the tarp. I would just bring some scissors and just slice the tarp up, and everybody leaves with the Oakland A's cape as part of the tarp.
If the A's know what they're doing, and obviously they don't, they should try to control the chaos somewhat and almost maybe, yeah, encourage some souvenir taking, but regulate it.
They should charge by the pound like it's a salad bar, and you just take as much stuff as you want, and as you walk out, you plunk it down on a big scale, and they've got like one of those like handheld check-in things, are like, that'll be $856.14 for your three chairs that you're taking out.
Pine nuts. The pine nuts are very valuable at a buffet on a per pound basis. You can actually, yeah.
You
can
actually kind of food, the expensive
you can kind
food.
Of screw over the buffet owner if he just
Where's
load
the
up
shrimp?
On the,
yeah.
It's John Lopez, Reggie Atatula. They are both here. Gentlemen, how are we feeling?
Feeling pretty good. Yeah. I think one thing you got to remember, Oakland is, or the A's rather, are leaving Oakland because they couldn't come to terms on getting that stadium either redone or getting another stadium. They don't give a damn about that stadium.
No, I know.
That A's organization doesn't give a damn. I don't know why they pretending like they give a damn.
That stadium. Have you been to that stadium, Reggie?
Oh, I've
been
there. Okay, I've not.
You've been there, right?
I have definitely been there.
Seth has probably played there before.
It's a hellhole,
right?
No, I never played there.
You never played there?
Good for
you.
I don't know. I might.
They were in LA and all that stuff.
You never had to run on the dirt.
Not in LA, but I mean, they you never played. You know, the Raiders were in LA.
Yeah, we went to a Raiders game there. We had a good time at a Raiders game.
I went to the last Oilers game at the Astrodome.
Did they rip out chairs there?
There was about 12,000 people there.
God
and they
bless.
Could so give two, they could give two bleeps.
Okay.
Because by then, it already lingered so long, and they were already gone and all that.
Yeah.
It was one of the saddest sights ever.
They also did share it with the Astros. You're ripping out chairs like, hey, whoa.
Well, yeah, that too. Yeah, that too.
Baseball season.
We still need that stuff.
Yeah.
Reggie, you said, you know, they don't care about that stadium, but at the same time, it's kind of like when people start fighting over stuff in a divorce. Like, you don't care about that antique chair, but you know your wife does.
In that case, I was the easiest divorcee of all time. I'm like, take it. I'm good.
Jan and I, she'd like, you know, I really like some fishing gear.
Exactly.
I don't fish,
that's
but
exactly
I could
right.
use about 27
that's
reels.
Exactly right.
Yeah, but the only thing is if you let the fans pick the stadium part, in that way, you are getting at the city of Oakland, aren't you?
A little bit. Do they use it for
that's
anything
true.
Else? You're helping them out.
So let those folks grab their two seats and stop sending the police after them.
Right. Boy, there's going to be a lot of sad people. I think about our old web guy, Garrett, who's the most diehard Oakland A's fan I've ever met.
And UNLV. He's had a bad week.
He's had a rough week.
He's had a bad week.
Holy crap. Yeah,
but he's had a bad longer time than a week, so he's used to it at this point.
Like, we're finally going to do it.
He's
there goes our quarterback.
He's a Niners fan, too. You know, they're 1-2 also now. Yeah. Wow.
Look,
on Garrett.
Yeah, well,
welfare check.
He usually texts me and about various things, especially whenever we're talking about the A's. He hasn't texted me.
Yeah, so. Nothing.
Look, it's Bay Area, man. I hope Antifa gets involved somehow.
Become ungovernable.
Whether it's just genuine Antifa or paid actors, I don't care. Like, let's make a spectacle of this thing.
I'm with it.
All right, boys. Well, you've got a big show coming up here.
Is it a big show?
Are you guys hungover like the Astros were yesterday?
No.
Are you guys ready to go?
I was very happy and perky.
Okay, good. Because the Astros were hungover. Poor Shea Whitcomb.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, how many people were actually paying attention and watching?
I feel bad for him.
If that error was an indication of him being hungover, then he's an alcoholic.
Yeah. Well, I thought about this. If I were a Shea Whitcomb in that clubhouse celebration, I would have gone crazy in there. Like, when am I going to get one of
found
these?
Money. Again? You know found what I mean? Money. 100%. Yeah.
I'd be going nuts. Yeah. My teammates would be looking around going, why is Shea celebrating? Yeah. Because he looks like he's 16.
Yes.
Yeah. Why is the bat boy celebrating so much? And why is he playing third base today? All right. We're done. We're out of time. You're listening to KLT, KLT HD2 on Odyssey Station. Seth, I will see you for a Football Friday tomorrow. Antibodies to you, my friend.
Oh, Football Friday.
Football Friday,
excited.
Baby. Yeah.
Antibodies and wabi-sabi to you.
Thank you very much again.
What a callback.
Appreciate that.